Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Dr. Helen Lavretsky, a professor of psychiatry and director of the Late Life Mood, Stress, and Wellness Program at UCLA. And we will be discussing yoga and dementia. We often hear how physical activity is vital for brain health. But often these discussions focus on aerobic activity. You have to get your heart pumping for those maximum brain health benefits. But there's more and more evidence touting the benefits of gentle movement activities, such as yoga or Tai Chi, for the worried well, for people living with dementia, and for care partners. Another piece that I think is really fascinating that we can layer on top of this research is oftentimes when we're working with people with dementia and these gentle movements like yoga or Tai Chi, this is typically a new activity for that person, meaning they are learning new things. I reflect back on my time early at Banner Alzheimer's Institute, and we had an incredibly popular program that we called the STAR program. And it was a person living with dementia and care partner program where they would participate in activities together and then they would separate and do things individually as well. And one of the paired activities that they would do was Tai Chi. And it was always amazing to see the participants week after week. You could see the people living with dementia remembering the moves week to week. You could see them anticipating where the movements were going, really illustrating that this was getting encoded into their brain. So to untangle the subject today, we have Dr. Lavretsky, who has managed some of the longest running studies of mind-body interventions for depression and cognitive decline in older adults.
And Heather, we are so excited to have Dr. Lavretsky here today. And I actually also was able to participate in a similar Tai Chi program for people living with Parkinson's. And it was fascinating to me to see how well they knew the movements and how smooth their movements were in the midst of what they were going through. And the other thing, Heather, is that you know how important mindfulness and yoga are to me personally, and how I share about the importance of this with caregivers, and how they can just take a moment to take a breath and how helpful that would be to just breathe for even 2 minutes. So what an honor to have Dr. Lavretsky with us to talk about her studies, about how yoga, other gentle movement practices, and meditation affect both mood and memory. And I am so interested to learn about not only the benefits of yoga for brain health, but also about her research about meditation and mindfulness and how it helps family caregivers and care partners with the stress and burden that they carry every day on the dementia journey. So I'm delighted to have Dr. Lavretsky join us and to share about her personal journey and her research.
Welcome, Dr. Lavretsky. Thank you for joining our conversation.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Before we dive into the research, please tell us a little bit more about your journey and what led you to connect with the dementia community.
Well, by training, I'm a geriatric psychiatrist, and I've been working with patients who have dementia and their family members, caregivers, all of my professional life. And I've done other studies that included drug treatment or behavioral interventions for either dementia or for behavioral disturbances or for mild cognitive impairment. But then I got introduced to Kundalini yoga while on vacation in Hawaii with my family. And I'd never done anything like that. And I had beautiful 10 days of doing yoga in a bay of the island of Lanai, a very mysterious Hawaiian island. And it completely consumed me since then. I came back to Los Angeles, found a yoga studio that trained people in Kundalini yoga, found amazing benefits for my own stress level and inflammatory markers and just overall health. Shortly after that, I found my passion to become a yoga teacher. I got certified as a yoga teacher and found my community of like-minded individuals for whom spiritual practices and yoga practices is like breathing air. And it also provided me with a lifelong tool for self-regulation, with which I could decrease my stress, which I have quite a bit of in my daily life, and deal with any kind of challenges and stressors. So I found this potent tool, and I wanted to share it with my patients. A year later, I got funding to do my first study with dementia caregivers. And because caregivers are very, very busy in their lives, having multiple responsibilities like taking care of their children and their parents and having jobs or commuting in traffic in Los Angeles, so they couldn't go to a yoga studio to take yoga classes. So we trained them to do an 11-minute meditation, chanting meditation, Kirtan Kriya in Kundalini yoga tradition, and found amazing, amazing benefits on multiple levels, biologically for the brain, for immune system, for aging biomarkers, and their mental health improved, resilience improved, compared to just listening to instrumental music. So that was the beginning of my journey as a researcher in this area that immediately involved dementia caregivers. And in those days, yoga was conceptualized as a tool for stress reduction. But since then, we found in that very first study that yoga can improve cognition very nicely. And so the second study we did was in people with mild cognitive impairment, in whom we also documented these people were not as busy as caregivers, so they were able to come to class. So we administered a one-hour class a week for 12 weeks, but they also did homework with Kirtan Kriya. And the comparison there in that study was memory training, which is a gold standard for mild cognitive impairment, where we would like to improve their cognitive memory function. And so just recently we completed, in fact, the second paper of the study was published yesterday, a study of women 50 plus, so it's middle age and older women with cardiovascular risk factors and subjective memory complaints or subjective cognitive impairment. And there are two we found quite prominent with a very similar design as in the previous study with MCI. We found benefits for the brain where brain connectivity and gray matter volumes improved and inflammation decreased. So that's the story of me researching this very powerful tool for brain health and overall health.
I am excited to learn more about the research that you've done. And I think it's remarkable. Sometimes we find inspiration in the most unexpected places, as you did on a family vacation. You know, we often talk about the benefits of physical activity for the brain and the body, but can you tell us a little more about how yoga specifically can be beneficial?
Right. Physical exercise is important, and cardiovascular effects are particularly important for maintaining cardiovascular health. Yoga can also help with that regard, and yoga types. You know, there are various schools of yoga that range from really rigorous and close to cardiovascular exercise, something like Bikram yoga or hot yoga, to very mild, like yin yoga, very mild or restorative yoga. And Kundalini yoga lended itself to being used in older adults who may have physical limitations, not being able to bend very well, or that could be also dangerous for osteoporosis, for instance. So Kundalini yoga has the same elements as other yoga types. It has asanas, which is postures, and it contains breathing, focus on breathing, mindful breathing, awareness of the posture, and also visualization and meditation. So those are components of Kundalini yoga that we use. What it also allows to do, like Tai Chi you mentioned, or Qigong, mind-body practices, also establish this awareness, mind-body awareness connection that aerobic exercise may or may not do. Because if you go to a gym, you could see these people exercising on all sorts of machines and watching television or listening to their devices, where it's still very disconnected from the body. In our very high-paced society, stressful society, we live above neck, as I call it, where mind-body connection doesn't exist or is not cultivated. So practices like Tai Chi or yoga establish this connection, and it is responsible for a portion of response of why people feel that the stress is reduced and inflammation is reduced, where sympathetic stress system is downregulated or silenced a bit, but the parasympathetic system, vagal system that lowers heart rate, lowers blood pressure, is activated. So there's a rebalancing of the stress response that's going on with mind-body practices.
I am just imagining you at the beach doing Kundalini yoga?
Kundalini yoga, yes.
Kundalini yoga. And you're in the Bay of Lanai and you're experiencing some of these benefits. So for our listeners, could you just share, when people think about yoga, sometimes they get scared of this umbrella term. They think, oh, if I go to yoga, I'm going to have to be doing pretzel moves. And from what you're explaining, that is not the case at all with this type of yoga. And it's not something people should be afraid of. So if you could just share again a little bit about that, and what are the main benefits of yoga for anyone?
Okay, so the term yoga means from darkness to light, achieving union with yoga. Yog means union with light. And that is an umbrella term for a variety of practices. There are thousands of meditations and many styles of yoga, especially in India and Pakistan, that are native to yoga. But they made their way to the Western world and are taught in our gyms. The most usual type of yoga is Hatha yoga or Vinyasa, which is flow yoga. But there's also some classes in sophisticated gyms like yin, or restorative yoga is being used in rehabilitation services, where a milder version, not competitive, where you are just practicing at your level, at your own ability, and you progress. And that's why it's called practice. You're never perfect. You practice at your level. And because of it, I usually say that yoga boot camp is an oxymoron, because it supposes competition, and you're really not competing with anybody, but just watching yourself perform this, becoming aware of your body and your breathing. So first records of yoga go back to 5,000 years. Patanjali is credited for documenting 8 limbs of yoga practices. And initially in India, it was practiced to achieve enlightenment. To achieve that light, yoga to light, you know, from darkness to light. But in the Western world, we use it, we're utilitarian, we're very pragmatic. So we use it for some things, like to achieve greater flexibility, calm, peace, It is a powerful tool for self-regulation. If you're stressed out, if you're in a difficult situation, you could just breathe with 3-3-3-3 breaths, 3 second inhale, 3 second hold, 3 second exhale, 3 second hold for about 3 minutes. And then your blood pressure drops and you no longer care about conflict in the room, you know, if you're in a conflictual situation in the room. So, and because everybody can breathe, it becomes a very potent tool, but it's also yoga. So, but I feel like this is a great tool to learn to have in your position. I also feel that it has to be taught to children so that they have this powerful tool. We don't, like my yoga teacher said, you don't have to wait for your heart attack to start doing yoga. The best way to do it is to teach our children to be mindful and have these tools to protect them from deleterious effects of stress, chronic stress. And as you know, the world is stressful after pandemic, with the wars, with the climate change, especially. We all need, we're starving for tools for how to keep calm. And so yoga is one of the very potent tools that everybody doesn't require a prescription, doesn't require going to the doctor. Once you learn it, it's your tool. So I feel very passionate. And in fact, I look for partners to launch a brain health campaign that would educate general public about the use of these tools. Also, the studies were done in pregnant women who were meditating versus non-meditating, and fetuses had better development. Birth was less traumatic, and also milestones achieved by children within 2 years after birth was greater, better in the mothers who practiced breathing meditations and yoga. So that just tells you it could be a universal tool for prevention of all disorders of stress related and aging related.
I'm curious, you have used the terms mindful, yoga can help you to be more mindful. You've used the terms meditation. How do those terms work with yoga? Are they components of yoga, or is mindfulness a separate practice?
So mindfulness became a street name in the US, in the world too, mostly because of the Buddhist practices and Mind and Life Institute, for instance, and the Dalai Lama really promoted. And researchers working with that institute really promoted the term mindfulness. But mindfulness really is awareness. Awareness cannot belong to one practice or another. It's universal. Once you become more aware of mind-body connection, you become more mindful. You are paying attention. Basically, it's you're paying attention. You're no longer disconnected. You're no longer distracted by other things. You're paying attention in the moment to how you move, how you breathe. So mindfulness can be trained by watching a flame of a candle. And that was very popular in the 60s and 70s. That's how people learned to meditate. They would watch the flame of the candle for hours at a time. And also in Buddhist practices, which comes from Buddhism, which has different there's Chinese Buddhism, there's Japanese Buddhism, and of course, Dalai Lama now lives in India. But the property of being aware is not just mindfulness practices from Buddhism, but it's also being aware of yoga practices. So mindfulness is an integral component of mind-body practices, including Qigong and Tai Chi, simply referring to the awareness, greater awareness that can be trained. We actually published a paper where we compared brain changes during mindful awareness, which is, you know, like simply attentional training and mindfulness that does not have too many yoga components, although some of the mindfulness protocols include a body scanning or stretching, but it's not as robust as in yoga practices where you move and you visualize, you chant, you have these other elements. And with, when it comes to the brain, it does matter what you do in that meditation. So meditation is not meditation, is not meditation, is not meditation. You really have to tell me what elements it contains in order for me to generalize it, what impact it would have on the body and the brain. But all of these practices have a common element. They calm the system down. They calm the stress down. And there's a term that is applied to all of the mind-body practices, relaxation response from the 70s that relates to this calming ability of mind-body practices. So in the paper that we published, we found that yoga practices, because it has so many more elements, many more brain areas are being activated across studies compared to mindfulness. So it was like a bigger brain benefit when it came to yoga versus mindfulness.
That totally makes sense to me. That calming ability, I experienced that with yoga. That awareness, that mindfulness, it doesn't matter what's happening in my day. When I go to yoga, I am able to just focus on the moment, on the move. And I'll tell you, we talked about benefits for me personally. I really have developed some core strength and strength in my, in many parts. And I can imagine it wouldn't matter for me personally, if I was sitting or standing, to me personally, you find this moment where nothing else matters and any stress and worry just kind of melts away. And you have this presence with the people that you're doing yoga with, or even just in the moment itself, if you're doing it virtually at home. So how is that awareness and presence beneficial for people living with dementia? And how does it work so well for people with mild cognitive impairment? I know you've done studies about both of those things.
Well, you know, it has the effect on stress. Stress is reduced. It does decrease inflammation. Because of it, it reverses some of the cognitive, some of the biomarkers of aging, like telomerase, which we found in caregivers, and other studies found shortening of telomeres is stopped by practicing on mind-body practices. And also direct neuroplastic effect on the brain. As I said, gray matter volumes increase in areas important for memory and executive function. And also brain connectivity improves, increases with all this, you know, so brain is making new connections. It's very neuroplastic. And that process can delay the progression of neurodegenerative and vascular changes in the brain that eventually lead to Alzheimer's disease. Or stop the progression, contribute to reversal of the progression of neurodegeneration. And, you know, it's not a single strategy that could be applied, but it could be a very helpful complementary adjunct strategy. Plus, it's a tool, you know, you just go to that. You don't have to swallow a pill or take supplements. It's something that's natural to you, breathes, and you change the way your heart works.
I would like to learn more, because we often hear how difficult it is for people living with dementia to learn new things. And you've touched on this briefly, but could you expound a little more? How are people who are living with short-term memory loss able to incorporate this new practice into their routine?
If you make it, you have to work at the patient's level or the client's level. And if you make it usable for them, I mean, it's movements, it's a body movement, so it's something that's natural. They can mirror somebody who's showing where to move, and the mirror capacity remains intact, or, you know, people can reach for it even in later stages of dementia. They could mirror your movements. Also, it's a different type of memory. It's not verbal memory. So what we're trying to do with patients with dementia, we try to invoke all sorts of a memory. Could be a tactile by touching them, repositioning their body parts or mirroring movements, or putting it to music that they love from their childhood or young adulthood. They start moving to that music, or providing smells of their childhood if their smell sense is still preserved, something like lavender oil that would calm them down. So you integrate sensory learning as well as verbal. And here with yoga or any kind of movement, you could bypass verbal abilities and just demonstrate it or dance, or so you could invoke other sensory modalities, not just verbal memory.
That in itself is incredible. As we're getting close to wrapping up our time together today, would you share with us a little about your study about caregivers and relieving stress through meditation?
Right. That was the very first study that I did, and that was groundbreaking at the time, which opened the floodgate of very similar studies to come through, where we measured all sorts of biomarkers. We wanted to understand what a brief practice, 11-minute a day practice, can do to the brain, to the body, to caregiver stress and burden. And we discovered that practicing 11 minutes a day for 8 weeks did a lot of physiological good. You know, people were more aware of their body. Because caregivers are so busy, as I said, they came to a realization that they can have time to themselves, even if it's just 15 minutes a day. But that was the very first step they took to take care of themselves. They learned a very simple kriya that was easy to follow. They didn't have to sit and try to empty their thoughts like it's required in some mindfulness practices, but they enjoyed the flow, the music, the chanting. So they were quite preoccupied. It was easy enough for them to follow this. They were not distracted, and it was brief. And so we found improvement in telomerase levels, in gene expression. That was the first study in humans that found changes in telomerase and in gene expression that demonstrated the ability to downregulate inflammation in 64 genes and upregulate antiviral protection, which would have been useful for things like COVID-19 or any other influenza infections. And we found that specific areas in the brain were more efficiently acting because of this training, and they were in inferior frontal lobe and posterior visual fields. And that is because of this multitasking quality of kirtan kriya and visualization that also translated into improvement in executive functioning tests on executive function like Stroop test and delayed verbal memory recall, which was completely unanticipated because these caregivers were middle-aged to older and did not have any memory problems. But the cognition improved regardless from this brief practice and their mental health. But what also transpired is their concept of themselves changed as a result of that. They said to themselves, now I have to take care of them, of me, and I can have these tools. I have to allocate time to take care of myself and to be a more effective caregiver.
This has been such a fascinating conversation, and I've really enjoyed learning more about your research. Could you give us your final thought when it comes to yoga and dementia?
I think yoga could be simplified like silver yoga or gold yoga or yin yoga to be useful for patients with Alzheimer's disease. I would use it across the spectrum of cognition. And if caregivers and their partners with dementia could do it together, it would probably improve the dyadic relationship and improve the burden that caregivers tend to experience. I think it's a tool for self-regulation. And I basically, as I said, I think that children should be taught in school how to do this in order to prepare to face any disorders of aging and particularly dementia in later life.
And Dr. Lavretsky, if any of our listeners would like to learn more, is there a website where they could connect with you?
There are several websites at UCLA where I work, SEMEL, S-E-M-E-L, .ucla.edu, /LateLife, or same SEMEL.ucla.edu, /integrative mental health.
Today, our conversation has been with Dr. Helen Lavretsky, a professor of psychiatry and director of the Late Life Mood, Stress, and Wellness Program at UCLA. We appreciate you helping us untangle yoga and dementia.
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you for inviting me to invite you to join my world of yoga.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Lavretsky, for that invitation. And thank you for your groundbreaking research, and to everyone who volunteered and helped with your research. Thanks to everyone who's made a difference with Dr. Lavretsky. And I encourage everyone to look into this more and make sure that as caregivers, you're taking even 11 minutes to take care of yourself. And thank you, Heather, for another great conversation. And thank you to you, our listeners, for joining us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at bannerhealth.com/Alzheimer's and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.